y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of drowning and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
On Friday, December 27th, 1985, 28-year-old Deborah Ann Wolfe didn't show up to her job as a nurse in the Fayetteville, North Carolina Veterans Medical Center. Her mother was immediately concerned and reported her missing. The young nurse was found less than a week later dead in the pond outside of her cabin. Her death was ruled accidental, but Debbie's family, friends, and much of the community believe that she was the victim of murder. Inconsistencies in the investigators' theory of what happened left Debbie's loved ones wondering if evidence of a murder was intentionally being overlooked.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. You guys know how we do it here. We start our episodes with gratitude. So we want to give a hey girl thanks to
Madison.
Madison wrote it. I don't know. Oh, because it says suggested by Beth and Naomi. I was like, I had Beth in my head, but that's why. And thank you, Madison, for writing this. And thanks to Beth and Naomi for requesting it.
Yay.
Yay. All right. So let's get into who Debbie was. Deborah Ann Wolfe, affectionately known as Debbie, was born on June 19th, 1957 in Blytheville, Arkansas, to Jerry Wolfe in Virginia, who went by Jenny Edwards. She had three brothers. There's really not a whole lot published about Debbie's childhood, but we do know that at the age of 28, she was living on her own in a log cabin.
Two kids Catholic.
Let's see. Also, if you've never been here before, neither of us know how to read. So
that's a whoopsie on our part.
Makes for an interesting episode, doesn't it? All right. No, in a log cabin. 7 miles outside Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is just over 2.5 hours to the west of Charlotte. So Debbie had developed a love for helping other people, and she thought that she could carry that into adulthood by becoming a nurse. She wanted to, the way she said, kind of make her mark on the world and repay the kindness that had been given to her throughout her life. And she thought perfect way to do this is be a nurse. So that's what she did. She worked at the nearby Veterans Administration Medical Center off Ramsey Street in Fayetteville. Debbie was very well liked. She had a lot of friends and family who loved her. A columnist for the Fayetteville Times newspaper described her as a, quote, dedicated nurse, lovely young woman, and an all-around happy person. Though she'd only been practicing as a nurse for about 2 years, she was a valuable asset at the medical center, and she was very caring and devoted to her patients. The Veterans Medical Center was a really busy place, as Cumberland County, in which Fayetteville was located, housed one of the nation's largest military bases, and that's Fort Bragg. Unfortunately, Cumberland County was no stranger to suspicious deaths and violent murders. About 7 months before Debbie's death, a mother and her 2 children were found murdered in their home on the military base.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then more than 15 years prior to Debbie's death, you guys are probably familiar with this case, Army doctor Jeffrey McDonald was tried and convicted of murdering his wife and 2 daughters. And that was a huge case. Then in December of 1985, the county of Cumberland was rocked by one of the most bizarre deaths, which is 28-year-old Debbie Wolf. And at this point, she's gone missing.
Let's talk about the day of the disappearance. Christmas in 1985 fell on a Wednesday, and Debbie spent the day at her mother Jenny's home. Her stepfather, who was a retired Army Sergeant John Edwards, he was also there, along with several other family members and friends. No one recalled anything about the Christmas holiday being unusual, right? I mean, we've talked about it so many times. Like, it's just an average day, holiday, whatever this falls on. But the following day, which was Thursday, the 26th, Debbie left her job at the medical center when her shift ended at 4 p.m. She was scheduled to return the next morning at 8 a.m., but she never showed up. And Jenny, her mom, said that this was immediately a red flag. Debbie was responsible. She never just did not show up for work. She would call her supervisor even if she was running a few minutes late. That morning, Friday the 27th, Debbie didn't call. She never went to work.
I don't understand, like, you know, we're going to run into the thing that we run into in almost every missing persons case where, oh, they're an adult. They could leave if they want to, right? It hasn't been long enough, like all that stuff. What I don't understand is, and what we continue to say over and over is that we don't understand, is she was the type of person who, if she was going to be 2 minutes late, she called and let her supervisor know. So now she's just simply not showing up for work. And a lot of times when something like that happens, you could try to get a hold of them. They don't answer. A lot of times you can call like the sheriff's department or whatever and say, hey, can you go out and do a welfare check on this person? They didn't show up for work, and that's concerning to me.
Right.
So then when you, I just, you know, like that's such, I understand that many people are reported missing and most of them don't turn out like the cases that we cover. But when you have criteria where it's like, this is completely and totally out of character for somebody, somebody who would always call if she was even running a minute behind, just simply doesn't show up for work, that's going to indicate to us that something happened to her. Why can't we take those seriously?
And now we have covered cases where people, the law enforcement has taken it very seriously. Like it's not sure. Unheard of. It has happened. But unfortunately, what happens most often is, well, you're probably making something out of nothing. Let's give it a couple days. Mm-hmm. But of course, we know that the first 48 hours of somebody going missing is they're the most important hours mm-hmm. of the entire investigation. So the likelihood of them showing up alive have dwindled with every hour going by.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I wish I had the answers. I just don't know. Ugh. That day, after finding that Debbie still wasn't answering her home phone, and remember, this is 1985, so cell phones were not even a twinkle in anybody's eye at that point.
Mm-hmm.
still is not answering her home phone. So Jenny, her mom, Jenny, who's, you know, Debbie's mom, her husband, John, and a family friend, Kevin Gorton, drove over to Debbie's cabin. And this cabin is pretty isolated from neighbors. And there was a pond nearby, just about 50 feet away from her front door. When the group arrived at the cabin, they first noticed that Debbie's two dogs, Morgan and Mason, were roaming freely around the yard. And that's not, it's not out of the ordinary. They weren't really on leashes in the yard, but the family and friend noticed that they hadn't been fed. Her vehicle was parked near the cabin, but not in the spot where Debbie normally parked it. And her mom noticed that the driver's seat of her car was pushed really far back from the steering wheel. And Debbie was all of 5'3".
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's absolutely no reason why her seat should have been pushed that far back.
Yeah. And we've encountered this before with other cases. And somebody wrote in and said that their vehicle, when they turn it off, it will automatically go back, you know, to like a further back position or whatever. And I have seen that in vehicles, but this is 85.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the standard there would have been everything is manually done.
Yes, you would have had to probably reach under the seat and pull that little lever and then scooch it back to get that far back. And friends and family said, you know, Debbie wasn't messing with her car seat because obviously it was where she wanted it. And like, why would you move it around all the time, right? Like,
yeah.
The only time I move my seats is if I'm cleaning out my car, like vacuuming it. I want to scooch it back to vacuum it and then I put it back to where it goes, kind of thing. But
or if I've dropped something.
Yes. Yeah. And it's gone to ever.
Uh-huh. And you never find it, especially when it goes right in between the seat and the console. And you try to jam your hand in there, but it really isn't working. Yeah. No yeah. prayers. But there's it's suspicious. It's out of the ordinary. So also in the yard, they found several empty beer cans on the ground. And Jenny said that this beer was not a brand that Debbie was known to drink. When they entered the cabin, they called out for Debbie, but she didn't answer, and there was no sign of her inside. John, Jenny, and Kevin looked around the home and noticed several small things out of place. There was one of Debbie's nursing uniforms lying on the kitchen floor, and Jenny would later continuously emphasize how strange it was. Her daughter was very neat, and it was completely out of character for her to leave her clothes out on the kitchen floor.
Yeah.
Kevin looked around Debbie's bedroom and told her parents that he found her purse underneath her bed.
Like shoved underneath her bed, it seemed.
Uh-huh. Those were the words that I heard. Because there is an Unsolved Mysteries, like...
Yes.
Like original Unsolved Mysteries uh-huh. on this. Mm-hmm. Robert Stack.
Yeah. You can find it on the YouTubes.
Yes. But yeah, they said that it was shoved underneath her bed. Debbie didn't normally keep her purse underneath her bed. I don't know anybody that does. I'm not saying you can't, but that's not where I keep my purse.
Right. And they knew that Debbie didn't normally keep her purse under the bed.
Right.
So yeah, like just a lot of things that are like,
that's not what Debbie would do.
Yeah.
That's
why is not that what Debbie there? Would do. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Unsure of what to do next, Jenny pressed the play button on Debbie's answering machine, and she heard an odd message from a male voice that she did not recognize. And the message said, quote, "Hey, Deb, missed you here at work today. I just wondering how you're doing. If you're able to give me a call up here at the ward, I'm at phone number.
Blankety, it's, blankety, blank, blank, yes, blank. Yes,
exactly. I'm at Flimby's.
Mm-hmm.
Or give me a call at home tonight. You've been out a lot of days. You make me worried when you miss another one. Just one to make sure you're okay. Bye."
Okay. With an answering machine, you know exactly when this message was left because it's time-stamped. It will say, "You have two new messages. First message." And it'll be like Tuesday, 2:20 p.m. Yeah. So we know yes. exactly when the message was left.
Right. And Jenny, of course, is like, excuse me. Debbie had only been missing for a few hours at this point. This is the first day that they haven't, you know, she's still, I don't know.
So this is exactly Scott Peterson telling Amber Fry that he was spending the first holiday season without his wife.
Before he even knew that she...
Yeah, before she'd gone missing. How did you know she was going to miss a bunch of days at work? Because, yeah, at that point, she's missed a couple hours tops.
Mm-hmm. It's just so bizarre. There's no reason for it unless you knew. Yeah, yes, exactly. I don't know why I can't finish that sentence because I feel like I'm stepping all over your point, which you just made. But yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Jenny, John, and Kevin left the cabin and started looking around the cabin, the yard, and the lake or the pond. And they still couldn't find Debbie or anything indicating where she might be. Jenny called the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department, who told her that they could only become involved for an adult that had been missing after 72 hours. What? For the next few days, Debbie's friends and family were essentially left wondering where she might be, if she was okay, and if they'd ever see her again.
Hmm.
It's got to be the worst. Like, oh my God, like limbo, like purgatory.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Finally, early in the day on Tuesday, December the 31st, the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office conducted a, I'm going to go air quote on full search. I'm just going to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't personally call it a full search.
Nah.
You know, I feel like there could have been a fuller search done.
Here is, okay.
Yeah.
If what they did was a full search.
What's a half search?
Yeah. That's a full search, just like when my husband is like, hey, I can't find my keys. And I'm like, or God, anything in the refrigerator. Are we out of ketchup? Did you look in the refrigerator? Yeah, I looked all everywhere in the refrigerator. Did you move stuff around? Yeah, I moved stuff around. Did you look in the door? We normally keep the condiments like in the door. Yes, I looked everywhere. It's not there. And then I walk over there and I open it and I'm like, there's the ketchup.
I did this recently. I opened a brand new salad dressing when there was one just right behind the milk. And I was like, it's not in there.
Exactly. So,
and then, yeah.
So that's not a full search.
I prefer an ocular pat down. Sure. I'm just like scan. Okay, no, it's
exactly. Not there. Yeah. And if that's what you're going to do, which I don't feel like is protocol for law enforcement when you have a missing person, but if all you are planning to do is walk in and look over here and like look over there and be like, I've looked everywhere. She's not here. Then, okay, fine. That's a full search. Just saying.
Whatever.
Yeah. So bloodhounds were brought in to search the surrounding area, but nothing was found. Jenny said the deputies searching walked around the edge of the pond. Okay. And they did look across the pond. So they come to the edge of the pond and they go, no, she's not in the pond either. She's nowhere near the pond.
Mm. Do we know if any of these law enforcement officers, do any of them have x-ray vision?
Okay, that I did not ask. Okay, that's true. Because maybe, all right, maybe one of them did. I know most departments try to have an x-ray vision officer on staff, but like, I don't know if he was off that day.
We can't maybe know. Not.
Yeah, we can't know. The pond was, the way Jenny put it, was small, but not that small. It was deep enough in some areas, and the bottom of it is muddy, right? It's not crystal clear waters like you're going to see in Panama City Beach, where you can look and see straight down to the bottom. It's muddy, and therefore it all just looks like muddy water. Like, you can't see to the bottom of it from just standing out on the side and looking at it. And Jenny did say it was deep enough to cover a person of average height in some places. So if you were to stand on the bottom, like my head, your head would be covered.
So therefore, and forthwith, that means that you can't just look at it and say, absolutely not, there's nothing in here.
This reminds me of that. Do you remember that was it a 1-800 Contacts commercial where it was like, look with your special eyes? Like,
oh, yeah, it was.
I say that to my kids sometimes. I can't remember that the exact commercial, but I just remember that being like a big commercial. Look with your special eyes. It's like, you're not looking though. You're not really looking. So Jenny said that day, the searchers are packing up for the day because it's getting, you know, late and dark. Those chilies, chips, and salsa are not going to eat themselves, okay? They got to get there. And so she's like, are you going to, like, put a boat in the pond to look around or maybe get down in the water and check inside the water? And they were like, well, it's too dark to do that today. but we'll let you know tomorrow if we decide to do that. She's like, okay. So Captain Jack Watts with the Sheriff's Department later said, he says this in the Unsolved Mysteries 2 camera interview, well, we'd been told that Debbie's friends and family had kind of poked around the pond before, so what was the point in us doing it too? Why do double the work? I didn't think we needed to.
I mean, it's been searched.
It's been searched. Yes, with eyeballs. With like and going like
maybe a stick.
Yeah. They didn't dive, they didn't get in the water, they didn't get any boats out. How do you what? Well, somebody else already looked around, so we decided not to do it. In what world has a family member or a friend of a missing person ever been like, well, I did all this. And so they're like, oh, okay, great. Well, you did that. So we can cross those off. We don't need to do it ourselves. What you've yeah, you done already, is equivalent.
You already talked to everybody, so there's no point in interviewing anybody.
Exactly. Surely you've asked the questions we'd want you to ask, right? What? I didn't think we needed to do that.
Appalling.
And he says that like what?
What'd you expect us to do?
Yeah, exactly. So Jenny said she finally asked him, okay, well, if you're not going to have somebody dive, then can I bring my own divers in? And he's like, sure. Again, less work I have to do. So on New Year's Day of 1986, Debbie had officially been missing for 6 days. Two family friends, Kevin Gorton and Gordon Childress, who had experience with search and rescue work, which like, what a fortuitous thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know anybody.
I don't know if I know anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting, but they had experience with it. So they had gear and like everything like that. So they get in the pond, they're looking through the water, and Gordon Childress had been like, you know, swimming around, looking around. And again, it's muddy water, right? It's not crystal clear water. You can't see too terribly far in front of you. And especially if you're at the bottom, because you're kind of kicking up stuff, you know, on the bottom. So he runs into something and he could see on the bottom drag marks and footprints. They didn't find those at the sheriff's department.
No.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
Hey, y'all. Did you know that we release an update all about us and what we're up to each week on our Patreon? It's called Tea to the Fourth Power Y, which is some time to talk to you, a nod to Not Another Teen Movie. And it's where we just gal pal with you about life, what we're watching, our love for Cracker Barrel Italian dressing. I mean, honestly, the sky's the limit.
You never know what you're going to get, really. Mm-hmm. If you want to catch an episode without being a patron, you are in luck. Just head over to killerqueens.link/TTTTY. Okay, time to talk to you. 4 T's and a Y. And you'll get to hear a full episode for free. And you can get every single regular release episode ad-free for as little as $3 a month. That's less than half the price of the coffee I get at Starbucks, so...
I know, that's crazy.
I know, what a deal.
Mm-hmm. And for $10 a month, you get all that plus our other two Patreon-exclusive shows, Murder Mixtapes, which is a full bonus case each week. Recent cases are Tara Grinstead, Hannah Cornelius, and New York Body Snatchers, just to name a few.
And you also get our other Patreon-exclusive show, Doc Jams, which is where we cover true crime documentaries episode by episode. We've done Don't Fuck with Cats. We've done Crime Scene on Netflix. They have Cecil Hotel and Times Square Killer. We've done The Jinx. We've done so many more. So be sure to head to killerqueens.link/TTTTY to get your free episode and hundreds more episodes to download right now and binge when you become a member of our Patreon community. So he sees these drag marks, he sees the footprints, and then he bonks into something and his mask fills up with water. So he like, you know, clears that, comes up to the surface. He's like, guys, I think I found something. He goes back down and he's like, this is a human body that I'm seeing. What he had run into was a 55-gallon barrel, like a drum, metal drum thing. And so he couldn't see the whole body because it was partially inside of this drum. But he could tell it was a human body. And he said, Quote, the body was inside what looked like a burn barrel. That's a rusty 55-gallon oil-type drum with holes in it. So he comes back up and says, I have found her body, I think. He didn't try to pull it out. He didn't touch anything. He did what he was supposed to do. They called the sheriff's department. And so they come back and they're able to recover the body, which was located about 30 feet from the bank of the pond in water that was about 5.5 feet deep. I don't know how this happened. Somebody must have put it there that day because they already searched the water and she wasn't in it.
That's true. Yeah. They sure didn't see it when they looked very thoroughly.
Very thoroughly. Yeah. And of course, this is the body of 28-year-old Deborah Ann Wolf. The whole time?
Right. The whole time?
She was in the water.
Any chance
I
get. Mm-hmm. Debbie's family and friends said that they immediately noticed some things about Debbie's body that were odd to them. They said that her face and clothing were clean, which seemed odd because, right, she's on the bottom of this pond, very, very muddy. There's a lot of silt in the pond, and she's completely clean.
Well, and that, we'll get a little bit more into that about the barrel, but that would indicate that she had something protecting her clothing. From the bottom. Yeah.
Right. They also said that Debbie's body was very relaxed, which they believed to be strange for a, quote, cold water drowning.
Yeah. Gordon said that and I don't know if he's calling on his experience of search and rescue and if he's found people that have drowned before, but he said they
typically the eyes are open.
Mm-hmm. And that they would typically be in, like, because as they're dying, they're fighting, they're trying to swim and pull themselves up and doing all these things. And I don't know if he's saying their bodies are kind of frozen in that position, but he said she looked like she was asleep and everything was very relaxed and like her arms were like down and.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I know that, I mean, there are a lot of different factors into what position your body comes to rest in. So I don't know.
I don't either. This is just from Gordon's mouth.
Yeah.
I don't know. The temperature in Fayetteville during the months of December and January was typically in the 30s and 40s, which is Fahrenheit, which meant that the water in the pond was extremely cold, likely with a thin sheet of ice on the surface. It seemed as though investigators immediately started thinking that Debbie's death was accidental. They believe that she might have been playing with her dogs near the pond, and then she slips and falls in. There's nothing to support that. They have no idea, but this is what they are thinking happened.
Well, but also, like, this isn't a pond you can just fall in.
Well, absolutely, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but the bank of the pond, it's as if you were going, like, if you're going to the beach, and you just kind of, like, walk in at a steady... Mm-hmm. Decline.
Have you ever fallen into the beach, like into the ocean on the beach?
Are we talking waves? Because yes, but
right.
No.
But if you fall in, you're just sliding down on your butt, right? Like you're not like, whoa,
completely submerged, right. And have no, yes, absolutely. There's no drop off or anything like that for this. Because
you could just stand up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like Robin Hood Men in Tights when he's like, I'm drowning. Yeah. I'm drowning. I can't swim.
Like, yeah, it's just so literally like their first thing was like, oh, well, she must have just fallen in the water. And I'm like,
there's no way that this happened. Mm-mm. And I could, that could be supported to me if there was a boat in the water and it's like, right. Oh, she went out on the boat.
Yeah.
And then something happened and she falls in, right?
Yeah, or like a pier over, you know, and that's you could have fallen off into the deeper part or something like that. Yeah, but no, this is a gradual step down.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fall in that. That's the wrong containment verb.
Yes, absolutely. Jenny, obviously, incredibly devastated. She couldn't understand why police hadn't taken her daughter's disappearance seriously from the beginning. In a newspaper article published shortly after Debbie's body was discovered, a spokesperson for the sheriff's department said, quote, we understand that she's upset. With whom and what about, we're not sure. We're going to withhold our comment until we're sure.
Until you're sure, yeah, about what she's upset about or...
I'm not even, I wasn't even there and I can tell you what it was. Got time? Like, you know what I mean?
It's a mystery to them.
Right.
Like, isn't your job to solve mystery?
No. They looked at Debbie, or excuse me, they looked at Jenny and they're like, oh, I can't figure it out.
Right. Like, ugh. You know what makes me mad is like, these are probably people who, and I'm very much speculating right now, so. But these are people who, like, you know, if their wives are upset with them or whatever.
Oh.
And she's literally like, if you do this one more time, I'm going to be so mad at you. And then they're like, oh, she just got mad. I don't know what happened. Like,
you just are did you like are you again?
Yeah, like are you this oblivious in every aspect of your life? You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean you don't know what she's upset about? Like, mm-hmm. And it gets so much worse.
Yes. When the same spokesperson was asked about Debbie's cause of death, or what it was, excuse me, he said, quote, I'm reasonably positive that it will be investigated as a murder, but we're awaiting the results of the autopsy. So why? You might be wondering why they thought it was an accidental death. Jenny knew that her daughter had been a victim of foul play. As she walked away from the pond towards Debbie's cabin, she heard investigators discussing how to mark the barrel in the pond and then how they were going to retrieve it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a large barrel. Like, that's mm-hmm. probably very difficult to get out of water.
Even with the holes in it, it's yeah. going to
because the holes
hold
are small.
Some of that, a lot of that water, absolutely.
Right.
So she walks back out to the pond about 10 minutes later to find the sheriff's office and investigators. They're just packing up and they're GTFOing. They're like, okay, we've done everything we can do here. And of course, so she asks one of her friends, she's like, hey, are they going to, did they get the barrel or what are we doing here? And the friend was like, look, the investigators decided they're just going to leave the barrel overnight. They're going to come back tomorrow and they'll get it. So the next morning, when investigators returned to retrieve the barrel, this barrel gone to ever. No idea where it went. Just completely disappears. Reportedly, investigators deny that they'd ever seen a barrel. It wasn't even there. It was a figment of your imagination.
You guys, they literally, they are looking you in the face and saying, you didn't see a barrel. I didn't see a barrel. Gordon didn't run into that barrel.
What they said was, all right, you might have thought that you saw a barrel, but what it actually probably was Debbie was wearing a jacket and in the water it had ballooned out. So it looked like a barrel.
Okay. The jacket that Debbie was wearing is what they call a field jacket. And it just looks like a regular, I don't want to say canvas, but
I know what you're talking about.
I would say it's a lined jacket. It's not a starter jacket. It's not a jacket that looks this big on you, right?
It's not our cozy scroties.
Right. And no matter what, this was like a green jacket.
Mm-hmm.
What Gordon saw in the water was a rusty old barrel with holes in it.
That was a jacket. He said that none of his divers ever touched the barrel. The pond was drained to about 2 to 3 feet and nobody found the barrel. Despite this, Gordon said, and he's, you know, again, the one who had found Debbie's body, he said, quote, there is no doubt in my mind. I am 100% positive that it was an old burn barrel or something of that nature.
And also, like, he knows what a fucking barrel looks like. Like, it's, you know,
I'm pretty sure most people know what a barrel looks like.
Yeah. And like, if you were to say like 55 gallon oil drum to me, I would have an idea of what it looked like. And in my mind, I would picture what this barrel looked like. There was a photo of the barrel mm-hmm. by the lake, by the water pond. If you said that to maybe my kids, hey, what does a 55 gallon oil drum look like? They may not know. Okay.
Sure.
But I guarantee you almost every single adult does. Even if you don't live out in the country, even if you don't use them on a regular basis, like whatever, you know what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Jenny said that there was an old burn barrel that used to be used for burning trash that sat next to, or close to Debbie's cabin, but they were using it for target practice with their pistols. So the holes, right?
Exactly, the holes.
When Jenny went to see if that barrel was still there, the barrel's gone, but she can still see because, you know, in the grass or dirt or whatever, you're going to see the indention of the bottom of the barrel in it. That was there. But
because it had stayed in the same place for like years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And nobody ever found the barrel. On January 2nd, the day after Debbie was found, Dr. William Oliver of the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office performed the autopsy. The cause of death was determined to be from drowning. There were no obvious signs of foul play or trauma, except for a few small abrasions on Debbie's fingers. Notably, there was no froth or foam reported to have been found in Debbie's airway or mouth, and this froth is often seen in drowning victims. Additionally, there was just a half teaspoon of water found in Debbie's upper airway.
So I looked this up because the half teaspoon, I wanted to know how much water would you expect to find in somebody's lungs if they drown?
Mm-hmm.
And I what I Googled was how much water in the lungs to be considered drowning. And it says it has been reported that it only takes 20 seconds for a child to drown and roughly 40 seconds for an adult. And in some cases, it can take as little as a half a cup of water to enter the lungs for the phenomenon to occur. And the phenomenon they're referring to is what's called dry drowning, which means your lungs are not completely full of water, right? Dry drowning is there's some water in your lungs and it's enough to cause this to happen. But she had a half teaspoon and they're saying...
I'm no chemist, but I think a half a cup is a lot bigger than a half a teaspoon.
Yeah. And they're saying, yeah, a half cup is on the low end. Like, and with
it
as
can
little
even occur
as a
with
half
a half
cup.
A cup.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. Not like... I just thought that was very interesting because the detectives, the investigators are like hanging their hat on this and they're like, well, there was water in her lungs. Well, a half a teaspoon. I mean, how much water is in your lungs or like fluid buildup, you know, like pneumonia or other things? Like, we're talking about a half a cup being considered dry drowning. She's fully submerged in this water.
Right. That to me does not get you from A to B, but it, for them it does.
Right.
Unfortunately, Dr. Oliver was unable to determine when Debbie had died due to her body being preserved in the cold pond water. The Cumberland County Sheriff, Otis Jones, asked the SBI to probe his department's handling of Debbie's case. The sheriff's office spokesperson elaborated again, seeming to place blame on Debbie's family and friends when asked why the SBI was asked to be involved. Quote, because of the manner in which the entire thing was handled in regards to the media, the fact that Mrs. Edwards and her friends and some members of the CID, which is Criminal Investigation Division at Fort Bragg, were involved Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before we were notified on Monday, and the fact that it is more than apparent that Mrs. Edwards is not pleased with our investigation.
Well, why would she be pleased with your investigation?
It's a piss poor investigation.
Exactly. You told her, no, we're not going to search the water. You guys already did that. So there's no possible way that she's there.
And then her only option at that point is to just get her own personal divers to go into the water.
Had she not happened to know somebody who had all the equipment and who knew how to do search and rescue? Like, are you kidding me?
Would they have ever found Debbie?
Exactly.
And she's like, are y'all going to get this barrel? And they're like, nope, we're coming back tomorrow. Well, guess what? Now we don't have a barrel.
All right. So you guys want to hear some inconsistencies? Let's do it.
Yeah,
all right. Okay. So investigators continue to tell Jenny that they believe that Debbie died as a result of an accident. Captain Watts theorized that Debbie had fallen into the pond. Again, we've already established this is not the correct containment verb. As a result of either slipping while playing with their dogs or that maybe one of the dogs gotten onto the bank or into the water and then she went in to get them out and then for whatever reason just did not stand up. Okay. They believed that she suffered from immersion syndrome. Essentially, they believed that it was possible that Debbie's legs and feet, while she was clothed in pants, socks, and shoes, had gotten wet from the pond, which ultimately caused hypothermia, which led to her becoming disoriented and being unable to get out of the pond. The thin sheet of ice that was on the surface of the pond could have contributed as well. I understand that that can happen, that you can become disoriented in water. I used to work with a woman who I was friends with, and she died this way. She fell into the lake from a... No, she didn't walk off the boat. She walked off the pier. She was intoxicated. She walked off the pier. She went down into the water. And instead of... She tried to swim. And instead of swimming up, she swam further down because she became disoriented and she couldn't tell which way was up. I know that being incredibly like cold can cause some things like that. But again, I would just like to see research on that happening in an amount of water that you could easily stand up in.
Right. I mean, I would think personally, if we're going with this, the dog theory that the dog got into the water and over its head or something like that, and then she got into it, maybe. But if we're talking, she just was playing with her dogs in the water and she slipped and that's what happened. I wouldn't think, personally for me, I don't know, if I'm playing with my dogs and I'm at the edge of some water and it's freezing cold outside and the water is even colder, obviously, I'm not going in ankles if that. And then if I trip and fall, then I will just pick myself back up again.
Well, right. Again, because if she were to trip and fall right there, fall into the pond, she's essentially falling in, she's slipping into a puddle at that point. Mm-hmm. So if she were to fall ass first into that essentially beach,
mm-hmm.
she might be up to like her chest in water sitting.
Right.
And then you stand up.
I don't see how that gets you to accidental drowning in the way that they're saying it did. Now,
you can't
I understand.
Fall in like, I don't know how many feet it was, but you can't, you know, she'd have to tumble. She'd have to do multiple somersaults in the water to get to the part where it'd be deep enough. I mean, in the air to get to the part where it'd be deep enough.
But also riddle me this. I know, I understand that they're saying the barrel didn't happen. You forgot, or you saw it. You're seeing things that did not happen. The barrel does not exist. I personally think that it did exist. And how can you accidentally drown and then end up inside of a barrel? How is that possible?
Inside of a barrel that wasn't just like on the bottom of the pond forever, and it just happened to, again, somehow she crawled inside of it as she was drowning. That barrel had always been over on the side of her house, and now it's not anymore.
So recently that you could see exactly where it was, the indention in the ground.
Captain Jack Watts took gaslighting 101.
I think he, yeah, taught it.
Mm-hmm. I think he got his master's in it. Okay, so regardless of what the investigators thought, Jenny, along with many of Debbie's friends and family, wholeheartedly believe that Debbie was murdered. Several months after Debbie's death, Jenny received a box of her belongings back from the police, which included the clothing that she'd been wearing when she was found. And Jenny said, "I looked at this clothing and it did not belong to my daughter." So the pants were a pair of brown corduroy pants that were way too big and way too long. The bra that she was in was also too big. She wore a 34B, and the bra returned to Jenny was a 38C. Now, I don't know how many of you wear bras that are listening or have experience wearing bras, but if I wear a bra that is way too big for me, it's very uncomfortable. Your clothes are like tucking into it. It's just weird. Like, nobody mm-hmm. is going to wear, if she's a 34B and this is a 38, that's way too big around. It's going to be slipping.
It's not going to stay put. Yeah.
And it doesn't look right with your clothes either. And you've just got all this space. Like, that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't wear, and she was at home. So, like, one of the things the investigator said, well, you know, if, something was going on with the dogs outside. She just grabbed whatever easy clothes she could put on and ran out there. Why would she put on a bra? If you were at home, you just go no bra with a shirt on or a jacket or whatever. But why would you put a bra on that's like...
And where would she even get, like, I've got stuff that I probably wouldn't put together as an outfit. And if I just needed to hurry up and do something, I would do it. And some of those things are kind of like jam pants, jam shirts, like PJs, right? Like a men's extra large PJ shirt. But a brown pair of corduroy pants, in what world? Why would she need something that like that was way too big and way too long? Why would she have the bra?
Like, the pants could have maybe been her boyfriend's pants, but not the bra.
As far as I know, couldn't have been
so,
the bra.
But even so, like you said, like usually if, and I don't know if the investigators even determined that, did they belong to the boyfriend or not? I know they supposedly talked to the boyfriend. I don't know in how much detail. You know, so I don't know if they asked him that question or not, but even so, corduroy pants are something that are, you know, a pair of like sweatpants.
That's like
jeans. A pair of sweatpants, you can tie the thing and tie it up if it's way too big for you, right? And you can kind of pull them up if you're just wearing them around the house. I'll wear Andrew's sweatpants sometimes. They're too big for me, but I make it work, right? I'm not going anywhere. I wouldn't wear a pair of his corduroys or a pair of his jeans. They'd fall off of me. You can't keep them up.
Right. It doesn't make any kind of sense.
And it's so crazy that, like, just off the top of our heads, we went through that much reasoning why she wouldn't be wearing those things. And you don't have to be a woman to understand that you're not going to wear a bra that's 8 sizes too big for you. Like, you know, but it's just like, did they think about any, did they, or are they just ignoring all of these things?
Well, yeah, the clothing, not even the only red flag. Exactly. But it's like every sign that they see, they're like, nope.
She was also wearing sneakers, which were white. And again, had no dirt on them, no mud on them. And there's footprints in the water. But everything that she was wearing was not covered in dirt. And Gordon that dove and found her, he said that there was so much silt and dirt and mud and all that in the water that it took them 3 days to wash their dive suits out. But there's not a speck of any of that on her white clothing, or shoes.
But also the shoes, they were a men's size 6. She wore a women's size 7.
And when the SBI was asked about this, they were like, oh, well, we didn't clean them. That's how they were found. We didn't clean any of it. It's how it was found, you know? And Captain Watts said, well, you know, Debbie's mom would certainly know more about the clothing that she owned or did not own and what she typically wore and did not wear. So, you know, I get that. But we do have photos of Debbie wearing the same shoes we found her in before her death. So we know that the shoes for sure did belong to Debbie.
Well, they've told the truth about everything else up until this point, so.
Right. Exactly.
I believe it.
Yeah, you also said that there was no barrel, so.
Yeah.
So remember the army field jacket that she was found wearing? It looked very new without a name tag on it, but Jenny said that the field jacket that, so Debbie did normally wear a field jacket, but it was one that had belonged to one of her brothers and it was still hanging up inside her cabin. So, like, mystery solved there. This is not the jacket she normally wears, right? She also was wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers t-shirt, and nobody in her family or friend group had ever seen that shirt before, ever. Jenny also said that there was a handmade Indian necklace with a pouch on it. That's how she described it. And inside the pouch was what Jenny described as a, quote, evil eye. And she said, quote, it enables the spirit to see its way into the next life. And she just said, I never knew Debbie had anything like these. So again, it's just something that she wasn't known to wear. It's not like the necklace she was wearing was like the necklace she wears all the time that other people would have seen. You know, a lot of people will have that, like, a couple pieces of jewelry that they will wear often, but nobody had ever seen this before. So again, it's just a lot of stuff, yeah, that doesn't seem like it belonged to her. a family friend who'd gone by the cabin after Debbie's death to feed her dogs, reported having found her winter hat in the mud on the opposite end of the pond where the footprints had been. Her friends argued that if Debbie had been outside and for some reason gotten into the water, she simply would have just walked back out. And like we said, the pond had that bank. It didn't have a drop-off edge, any of that. The family friends who'd searched the lake found Debbie noted that it was very strange, again, that there was no dirt on any of this clothing. Just none of it. This doesn't make sense. The nursing uniform that Jenny had found on Debbie's kitchen floor when she first searched the cabin was a short-sleeved uniform. One of Debbie's coworkers said that he was positive that Debbie was wearing a long-sleeved uniform the day that she was last at work. And he said that the two of them had had coffee together that day at work, and he recalled that he'd spilled a little bit of coffee on the sleeve of Debbie's uniform. Reportedly, the long-sleeved uniform Debbie was wearing on her last day of work has never been located. If she fell into the pond unexpectedly chasing one of her dogs, then whatever she'd worn that day would presumably still be in her cabin.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason for
she
it to just
disappear. She wouldn't take it, drive her car somewhere. Unless she dropped it off at a dry cleaner's or something, but there's no evidence of that. But then come back, pull the car seat all the way back, wear a bunch of clothes that she never worn before that don't belong to her, that don't fit her.
None of it. None of it.
The state of Debbie's house was a big red flag to anybody who knew her. It was apparently in a state of disarray. And even her yard was really messy. And Debbie was known for being very, very neat and orderly. Again, she wasn't going to leave beer cans all over her front yard. And her car was in a different spot than it normally was parked. She had one spot that she parked in. Most people do. Just everything was out of the ordinary. And again, that driver's seat was pushed super, super far back. And she's 5'3".
And again, right, like, there's no reason for it. So we're going to talk about suspects and theories. There were two people who Jenny thought could have killed her daughter. One of Debbie's duties at the hospital was to coordinate hospital volunteers, so this included volunteers from all types of backgrounds. One in particular bothered her quite a bit and had a history of psychiatric illness. Somehow, the volunteer found Debbie's home phone number and started calling her, almost to the point of harassment. The night that Debbie's body was found, this man was questioned, and he reportedly had an alibi and refused to take a polygraph. After finding that the man had an alibi, he was not questioned any further and left several days later to go out of state. And Madison brings up a good point. Yes, he says he has an alibi, but they have no idea when she died.
Right.
So are we talking about a full week alibi? Because she was found 6 days after she disappeared. He has an alibi for all day, every day.
Right. And what was his alibi? Because anybody can have an alibi, right? Like, you can say, oh, well, I was at home.
Right.
Are we just taking his word for it? We've seen lots of cases where initially an investigator has not followed up on an alibi and made sure that it checked out. And then we find out, you know, decades later, oh, that's not actually where they said they were. I mean, really, the only rock solid alibi is if you're in prison.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we know that there are certain red flags for people who are being suspected or, you know, under the microscope for committing a crime. It's a change in your appearance, a big change, moving suddenly.
All of a sudden, you've left the area. Right. Sold a car, bought a car.
Changed jobs, changed, you know, big life.
Yeah.
Changes. And like what, the day after he was questioned, he was like, okay, I'm just moving to a different state. Yeah. There was also another hospital volunteer that had been continuously pestering Debbie about going on a date with him. And she told him, look, I've already got a boyfriend. I'm not romantically interested in you. And Jenny believed that this was the man who had left the voicemail on or the message on her answering machine. And he was also questioned by police, but don't ask me anything else about it, okay? Because I'm not going to tell you anything. You may not know. That's all we know. Captain Watt said that he felt that his department did a solid investigation and that they interviewed everyone that the family was concerned about. And he said that there was absolutely nothing to indicate that Debbie had been a victim of homicide.
Except like all the
things that we just already talked about.
He's like, well, I mean, I questioned everybody they wanted me to. What more do they want?
Again, and that they wanted me to. So her family are the ones who were in charge of this entire mm-hmm. investigation. All of a sudden, well, clearly because they didn't do anything unless Jenny was mm-hmm. like, are you going to do this? And even still, they were like, yeah, no, we're not going
to
do that.
Your job is to develop leads out of the evidence that you find and then follow those leads. And
I don't think I'm asking for the moon here. Collect sure. the evidence.
Please collect it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Jenny believed up until her death in August of 2002. That breaks my heart too, when parents or loved ones of anyone that has been a victim of a suspected homicide or mm-hmm. missing person, they end up passing away before they have any answers. It's just so sad. She died in August of 2002, that Debbie had been abducted and held hostage by one of the two volunteers from the hospital. She thinks that she was kept alive for several days and then killed. And she believes that Debbie's body was brought back to her property to be disposed of in the pond to make it look like an accident. That the killer or killers put her already deceased body into the barrel to weigh it down in the water.
I'm not sure that she was kept alive for days.
Yeah, that's the only part that I'm like, the rest of it could track for me. But that part, because nobody had checked if they checked it before and there was nothing and then all of a sudden here she is. Sure, I get that. But that's not what ended up happening.
Yeah, because so. The barrel going missing too, I hate to say like be one of those like conspiracy theorist people and being like, well, the police had to have disposed of it. But if you, that would be a really big risk as the killer to come back to her house days later after people are already
an active will.
Even her family and friends have come by and been like, okay, well, we can't find her here. Like, they're continuing to come back by to look around and stuff like that. It's just a really big risk to take to come back to her house and dispose of her body there. I think that she was killed and her body was disposed of right then. I just don't think that. I think that she died on the 26th or in the early morning hours of the 27th. But I just don't see somebody coming back and then again, coming back again after they pulled the barrel up or after they found the barrel, going in and pulling it up out of the water. I mean, I don't know why the police would do that either, but you know what I mean? Like, it just, yeah. I don't, that just seems like way
maybe,
too
but maybe
much
not.
Of a risk for whoever perpetrated the crime to me.
Sure. Regarding the missing barrel, Jenny believed that the killer or killers went back to the pond, right? So, but I mean, the thing is, she's thinking that they removed it to get rid of any evidence that could have been taken from the barrel. But I mean, there's nothing to support or deny we don't know. We don't know. But I am sure I've met a few barrels in my day. And they don't just disappear. I've never met one that has ever disappeared just all by itself. Never, ever, ever.
I don't think so either. I did also read that they had taken during autopsy a vaginal swab and semen was found.
Now, the fact that we don't know anything about that, I mean, could very well be because maybe it was her boyfriend.
Right, but listen to this. I mean, obviously in 85, 86, DNA wasn't like it is now, right? Well, why not just test it now? We have that. Oh, they lost it.
Ah! Oh, I shouldn't be surprised. That should not be a shocking revelation to me. But public opinion varies a bit on what the community thinks may have happened to Debbie. Some do believe that her death was the result of a tragic accident, that Debbie might have grabbed some old or ill-fitting clothing like we talked about, you know, just run outside to play with her dogs or feed her dogs and slipped into the pond. Many agree that with Jenny, and they think that Debbie was the victim of a murder. Some think that an intruder assaulted and killed Debbie in her own home, then disposed of her body in the pond. Others think that Debbie was abducted from her home, taken to a secondary location where she was assaulted and murdered. If her murderer redressed her before disposing of her body, that could explain where some of the odd clothing came from and why her work uniform was never found. As Debbie's case was never listed as suspicious, no one was ever named as a suspect or person of interest, and her death is still listed as accidental. I have the feelings.
She didn't slip into a pond. I mean, I don't know. You guys let us know what you think happened. If there's anything else that, you know, any other theories that... That's one thing about, you know, doing something like this is like they're... You will talk to somebody about a case and they will give you a suggestion that would never have occurred to you, you know?
Oh, sure.
So...
Like see it through a new lens that you didn't even...
So we're definitely interested to know what you guys think, but I think we both are on the same page that she didn't fall into this pond.
No. None of that makes sense
but
to me.
And then the weird thing is there was no trauma found to her body. I don't know.
I do think that we've talked about this a bunch. If you're going to go with, and the police, as far as I can tell, the police here, especially the captain, he thinks that they did everything that they were supposed to do. They did an active investigation as a homicide and found it to not be true and that it was accidental. And we've said before, like, investigate both. Let's say it was an accident, but let's also say, what if it was a homicide? And let's work both of those angles. Personally, do I think that they did everything they could to investigate it as a homicide? No. Right. But I think if I were to talk to anyone who worked on that case, you know, and said that, they'd be like, we did.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you wouldn't get anywhere with that.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, of course, like we said, or like Trella said, just let us know what you guys think. Because, yeah. But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you. And we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, you guys, it's time for shout outs.
Yippee.
Yeah, we want to give a hey girl thanks to some of our newest patrons. We also lovingly call this segment Gonna Fuck Your Name Up.
Yes.
Because that's going to happen. Okay.
Lovingly.
We are doing our best here, but sometimes we can't read, and you guys already know that, I think.
Yeah.
So we want to give a hey girl thanks to Mandy Wolf,
Cheyenne Deschamp,
Lauren Plunk,
Elise,
Joanne Carter,
Dina Hurley,
Amy Apatone?
Kaylee Newell,
Jill Gorner,
Laura Gomez,
Janet Snyder,
Alyssa,
Grace,
Danny Ellis,
Kaylin,
Ruby,
Ashley Jones,
Marissa Landis,
Cassie Roby,
Haley Hernandez Maris,
Alyssa Edwards,
Becca Stalker,
Kim,
Jenna Hartman,
Cindy Ross,
Kimberly Michelle Putty,
Amanda Phelps,
Naomi McBlain,
Amber Grott,
Tony,
and Ella
Coonley.
Coonley. Okay, that's what we're going to go with.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys, thank you so much. We could not do this without you. And also, like, a big super extra special, with thank you to everybody, but extra special to Haley Hernandez Maris, because she's in the Totally Buggin', and that's $50.
Oh, you angel.
My God, thank you so much, you guys. Like, you guys are keeping us going. Ad sales right now are just abysmal. It's like that for every podcaster right now. Everybody is struggling, and it just means the world to us that you are keeping the lights on over here. We love you guys so much.
Thank you. We cannot thank you enough. But we love you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.